Greetings, 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 greetings. Ah, wonderful. It's a great miracle everybody made it from the fairy world back to here, because we're both here and in the fairy world. We'll describe that dynamic. And yes, I sent out, you know, one email at 2 a.m. last night, you know, just because Aaron was away. And I was like, I hope it gets to people. I think it got to a few people. Autumn, how's your mother? Right. And again, all of our experimenting. And then we send out another thing, but Aaron was in the baby fairy world, as should we all be in some way. And then we just send it. And here you are. Or as the Bengtsons would say, here you are, beloved, born at the right time, beloved, under the right star, beloved, with plants, supportive plants beneath you, beloved. There we go. So yes, well, we start off with something we've heard before, but it's so wonderful. And it reminds us that we're all doing more than we know, right? It's the Bengtsons and the garden and about things brewing in the dark. So let's begin with that.
Woke up this morning and there was food on my plate. Celebrate. Celebrate. And everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah. Hallelujah. And everything that grew had to first be planted in the dark.
Planted.
A little spark. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark. And everything imagined in the dark had to first be imagined by someone. Oh, someone who remembered that the future is the garden of the past. Someone who remembered there was a hunger and it was coming and coming fast. Someone who was willing to go down into their dark with roots and seeds for a future they would never see. For a future they would never see. Was it you? Was it you? Or was it you who remembered what to do? I think it was you. I'm pretty sure it was you, honey. I think it was you who knew what to do. Come on. Hey, you know, I woke up this morning and, well, there was food on my plate. Thank you. I'm gonna celebrate. Let's celebrate. Yeah, and everything on that plate was there because it grew. Hallelujah. Hallelujah, yes. And everything that grew was planted in the darkness. And everything that was planted in the dark had to first be imagined in the dark, like a spark of the mind or of the heart. And everything imagined in the dark, oh, it has to be imagined by someone. By someone. Oh, someone who remembers that the future is the garden of the past. Oh, yeah. Someone who remembers that the future is coming and it's coming fast. Oh, she's coming fast, you know. Oh, someone who said, yes, I'll go down into the darkness with only roots and a handful of seeds and plant a future I will never see. I'm gonna plant a future I will never see. You know, I think it was you. It was you, wasn't it? I think it was you who remembered what to do. Oh, I think it was you, yeah. Oh, I think it was you, yeah. I think it was you, beloved. I think you know what to do. And honey, oh honey, I'm gonna meet you in the garden. I wanna meet you in the garden. In the garden.
Whoa. Oh, team. Right. Okay, let me switch my viewpoint, but I realize in listening to her over and over again, she has an entheogenic voice. It's like, whoa, it opens the portals between worlds. It's such cathartic yearning. You can really undulate and every word. Oh, it's like, that's what we aspire to. That's what we've been doing, you know, planted in the dark, right? Our intentions, right? Our dedication for self and community, you know, and at first had to be imagined in the dark. And we go, oh, whether we know it or not, we've been doing this. That's really great. You know, by someone who remembers, right? Remembering, you know, the whole Pisces, Saturn stationing now at the dark of the moon when people gather to determine the course of culture. Whoa, okay. And Saturn stationing our dedication. And there was another thought, but it went away, and this one will do, right? You know, Saturn's image is a girl with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy. And we go, oh, right. And the thought was Saturn and Pisces. Pisces is everything that mainstream culture has forgotten, but that we must remember, right? And she has that great, you know, someone who remembers. And then her next line is, you know, there's a hunger coming, which there is, right? There's a hunger all over the world, the breadbaskets and the Ukraine and the thing and the whatever. And so our willingness, right, and necessity to partner with the plants and with our wonderful plant wizard guide here, and the plants, we'll see who wants to show up. But yeah, and then she says, she ends with, the future's coming and it's coming fast. And we go, it's true. Anyway, I love that. Feel free to comment or speak out, or and it's our ongoing experiment of, you know, how shall we counsel? Remember, it's like I often forget that, you know, what we say is actually true. It's like, oh my God, it's true that the old forms are and the new forms aren't quite in place, you know, about everything. And so it's that, you know, how shall we create the atmosphere of easy to and fro amongst ourselves? And what I put in the 2 a.m. missive, and then again today, I'm talking with Aaron, I go, right, so there's a certain symmetry. We began on Beltane, and that was open to all good-hearted beings, you know. And I said, so there's a certain symmetry to the summer solstice, which is next Tuesday, to open it up to all beings. But with everybody here's dedicated craft and encouraged to send a solstice blessing and a plant you want included in the council as part of that. But then we thought, but we're not done. So it's like, open the thing. And then we wanted to offer everybody as part of the thing, just an extra session on June 27th, because to go, all right, more counsel-y. And I've still got everybody's charts and everything, and still so much reciprocal blessing. So I've heard from a few of you going, yeah, all right, yeah. But let us know if you think that that's a fun, good idea. I think Sean's just hearing about it now. But is that good? Uh-oh.
I had muted myself during the music and forgot to unmute. I love it. And I had, you know, I've just been settling into the rhythm of our journey and feeling like, oh, well, this is what we do on Tuesdays. So I'm right. Glad to extend it further.
It's always like too little and too much time, or too much and then yes. Too little. And it's like, Right. So I think we've tricked Trickster by going, all right, you know, next week's the last one. Just kidding. Right. There we go. And so, right. And we get to do everything that we haven't done, right. You know, on June 27th. And I think it's a great kind of, here we are dedicating. And then we open it up to everybody, but your blessings welcome to be included, and the power of you, us all, in whatever form, Zen or lackadaisical, we've been, you know, dedicating, like, what is our primary dedication? And to keep the metaphors going in our hearts that, you know, our dedication crafts our alchemical vessel that we then get to set sail in. I just love that. I just love the vessel metaphor so much. And remembering that Saturn and Jupiter are so beautiful, say, you know, whatever shape the vessel, whatever vessel you form, whatever you put on your altar or draw it or make it out of straw or whatever, Jupiter says, I will fill it according to the template, right? But whatever template we put on our altar is what we're, you know, inviting into the world. So that's fun. And then I wanted to go off a little bit, Sean, on the indictment and the atmosphere and the Princess Parizada. Is that good with you?
Yes.
Okay. Right. So I'd send out the indictment chart, but the clever rascal arrived an hour early. But he was booked at 3 p.m., 3:04 p.m., so close enough. But I liked the narrative that he arrived at 2 and the black car immediately went into the underworld parking garage, right? And I go, oh, that's good. So this is a powerful ritual. And I'd been encouraging, and hence sending you all something at 2 a.m. last night, going, let's participate. Even when we're not together, we have these skills that we're encouraging in each other of atmospheric magic to brew the atmosphere. I have lavender and I have psilocybe. Right. So my favorite brew, atmospheric brew, is lavender and psilocybe mist, but encouraging everybody, you know, like maybe some devil's club or what do you want to put in your mist, Sean, to quell conflagration?
Well, to quell conflagration, rose always comes first.
Oh, that's so generous. That's so generous. What a great thing. They'll never expect that. Being sent love. That's very good. That's excellent. That's very Celtic Trickster, right? We're going to bless them it's like my two cats are very two rescue cats. They love each other, and the guy who's huge is like, I'm going to wrestle with you until you surrender, and then I'm going to kiss you all over, right? It's very darling, and she likes that, right? So that's part of in our mist, right? We're going to wrestle you and then just love you like the childhood you didn't have that made you such a wombat kind of thing. But whatever we did or didn't do, the general participating in this atmosphere, it was very calm. It was as we would have wished, you know, looks good, you know, very calm. And but the comment that they kept making about the former guy was he looked stony faced. And I go, oh, that reminds me of a crucial part of the tale of the Princess Parizada. Perhaps you know it. I have often told it. Do you know it, Elizabeth? No? Oh, good. Well, wondrous good. Well, the whole story is great, but this is just a little pertinent excerpt reminded by the news commentary, reminds us of the fairy tale plant commentary. So the 1001 Nights, you know, Scheherazade, right? It's stories within stories within stories. And it's mostly women redeemers. You know, in the course of time, you know, it's somewhat edited out, but mostly women redeemers. So Princess Parizada, her name means fairy born. Very now. And she's the youngest of three, and she's lost parents. But where we join the scene is... The children were set the task to climb the magic mountain and return the talking bird, the singing tree, and the waters of life to bring the world back to bloom. But it's an arduous and dangerous adventure. And her brothers have set forth one by one, and they said, here are these pearls, you know, Parizada, if they break, it means I'm dead. You know, and she's like, oh, they broke. Oh, no. And the other brother says, and, you know, here's this wristlet of mine. If you see blood, it means I'm dead. And she goes, oh, no. So she sets forth to the mountain, and there's a Sufi beggar at the bottom. And right, remember, fairy tales, the outcome has everything to do with how we respect beggars and tip waitresses. And she says, grandfather, do you have any advice for me? And he said, you know, no one has ever asked before. This is very promising. And he goes, I do. I have some very specific advice. You know, as you climb the mountain, demonic voices will be yelling customized insults at you, and you must not react. You must not turn around. You must not react. If you do, your heart and then your face and then your body will turn to stone. And she goes, oh, grandfather, what if I stuff my ears with chamomile? And he goes, that's a very good idea. That's a very good idea. You know, try that thing. And so she heads up the mountain, and she can hear the voices just customized. Think of all the self-denigration that in the past we have heaped upon ourselves, like, oh, you know, you're a fraud and it's terrible. And just customized. And she's like, thum. She can hear it through the chamomile, but thum. And as she gets closer to the top, the talking bird on the tree is like yelling even more, you know, about, you know, how much her mother hated her. I mean, she's there. And then she arrives, and the bird goes, well done. And the trees and all the creatures are like, well done. You've made it. And I will hop on your shoulder and return to the world with you. And you don't need to cut the tree. Here's a little cutting of the tree, the singing tree. It will sing the world back into harmony and the waters of life. Here's a flask. And she says, oh, but my brothers, I'm so sad for them. And the bird says, no problem. Just take some of the waters of life, and as you come down, sprinkle a little water on them, and you'll bring them back to life. But being Princess Parizada, you know, a Venusian woman hero, she, not content with that, she sprinkles the waters of life on everyone coming down the mountain. All those who could not resist reacting, and whose hearts and then their faces had become stone, and they come to life, and she comes down the mountain, and there's this glorious chorusing, and the waters of life and the trees on earth begin to bloom again, you know, and she's followed by all those, you know, that she's brought back to life. So that's Parizada wanted to make its way into it. So for all of us, you know, as we're insourcing our Saturn, that we suck the chi out of tyranny, and this public accountability trial ritual, which is very good, and it's going well. This is good. This is good, and we love John Smith. And then just one little thing, and then let's to and fro, and at any point, if people want to go yes or no with this, okay. But so the former guy is giving some kind of rally. I forgot where it is. Georgia, I can't remember, tonight. But remember, with all of this Gemini, the sun in Gemini in the eighth house of ancestral download of power of language, incarnational agent of Mercury, Mercury at 4+ Gemini, which is radical magazines circulating, liberating ideas. Okay, part of our atmospheric mist that we've been wafting and that we want to continue to practice. Remember, we're allowed to set in motion any wish, spell, as long as we would happily accept it ourselves. So I propose to the council, how about, you know, may any words enslaved to lies leap to freedom out of the former guy or anyone's mouth, right? So it means we would take that too. Are we up for that? That if we were to tell a lie, it would like, right? So, but, and then Sean, is there anything that would help us in that fun experimental dedication? Just, is it, you know, where Calamus is the protector of true speech?
Calamus is a protector of true speech, and Calamus connects the speech of the throat with the expression of the heart. So Well suited indeed.
So we could, yeah. So might then Calamus help us to go, and what the person's really thinking, may they say, oh, that'd yes. be fun. Oh, that'd yes. be fun.
Or what the person's really feeling.
Ah.
But oh. who the person is really being.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right. The mercury behind the mask.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I'm lighting the calamus now because I've become a big fan. Mm. And putting it a little bit in my smoking mixture.
Mm.
Playing. We want playfulness. Yeah, and the present. So yeah, anywhere you want to go here. I'm meandering around.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking about many things, and one of the first is I'm thinking about what does it mean to be turned to stone?
Yeah.
And if we let go of our human supremacist viewpoint, we can say, oh, to be turned to stone is for all of the processes of your being to be slowed down to a geologic timescale, which then allows you to reflect more deeply on how you're moving and why. And I think there are so many things that we view as curses that do not necessarily need to be seen as such. I think about the Scottish Ballad of Tamlin, when the Queen of Fairy is angry that her lover knight allowed himself to be wooed back into the mortal world by a mortal woman. And she says that had she but known that betrayal were to come, she would have placed his heart and his eyes into a tree. And the way that the first level that we're likely to receive that is a level of what a horrific punishment. But then if we look at it from a point of view outside the human center, it was, if I knew that you would not hold your faithfulness to that wild and magic world, I would have made you see and feel as though you were a tree, and then perhaps you would have chosen differently.
There's a wonderful video called Reggae Shark, which knows it well, and perhaps you do, but a witch turned him into a shark, you know, and then he does good, and he goes, no, I offered the freedom, no, I'm staying, right? So there's a lot of, I'm staying in this dynamic. Can I come back on? Oh, okay. All right. On stone, but yeah.
And then there's also just, there are some contrarian voices that are wanting to come forth with me. And one of those echoes that I'm hearing is the great Catholic anarchist Eamon Hennessy.
Oh.
Who every time he was hauled before the courts, when asked for his plea, would say, I plead anarchy.
Nah.
And one day the judge said, oh, what do you mean by that, Eamon? And Eamon replied, oh, judge, what good are your laws anyway? The good people don't need them, and the bad people don't follow them. I plead anarchy. And there's a part of me that feels some echo of that in looking at what's happening in the former guy's world, that on the one hand, there is a certain symmetry and a certain justice to he who made the laws around things being kept secret or punitive, being subject to their penalties. And certainly all that he did was out of narcissism. And yet at the same time, I look at, but here's this law that's being brought to bear that was created in World War I to silence dissent and information about what was happening in the war. And here's the law that was used to prosecute Daniel Ellsberg, here is the law that was used to prosecute Eugene Debs. And in some ways, it kind of does fit that Eamon Hennessy piece that
well,
the bad ones don't follow him and the good ones don't need him.
Yeah, that's one story. And we're in Gemini Festival, so we're all allowed six or seven. It's true. And then, you know, but I'm delighted to hear about Eamon Hennessy, Catholic anarchist, and reminded of David Grimes saying, the only archy we like is malarchyarchy.
Right. Yes.
Malarchyarchy, you know, bring it in, you know, which is, again, the playfulness is also the key. But it's the former guy's birthday tomorrow, right? So we're in Gemini Fest, you know, and you said it was Gerald Gardner's birthday and it was Anne Frank's birthday and it's Jack Smith's June 5th birthday. It's, you know, it's like what these are all magicians of a kind. And then how do magicians lose their magic?
Mm.
You know, is one of our thoughts. We were speaking backstage about wanting to address the public storytellers like James Cameron and what is it, Richard Powers, right? And it's an issue of people. I'll say people for the moment. It's men, but it's really all people. You know, who do great crafting and then don't believe in their magic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a useful thing when I hosted Michael Gruber years ago, who writes really stunning esoteric thrillers, like really takes you there, you know, and fabulous, you know, and the basic premise is academic person goes to study black magic in Siberia, terrible fort, must then become authentic and practice it. But a street person listener in Los Angeles listened to the interview and said what I encapsulated it. He said, oh, you know, like how when you love somebody's art and it's all magic and everything and you meet them and you realize they don't believe in it. It's like, and maybe one of our playfulnesses today is, you know, for all wizards and witches, part of our team, you know, born, you know, look around going, well, other people aren't doing this. Let me tie my magic hand behind my back and forget. All right. And then go, God, life is really hard with one arm. And then maybe now we go, wait, I have another arm. I mean, is that a fun idea, Sean?
It is, yes. And I feel like, yeah, belief is such a funny thing. And I always go back to Granny Weatherwax saying that witches don't believe in gods. They interact with them far too much to do so. It would be rather like believing in the postman.
Wait, believing in the what? Granny Weatherwax said we don't believe in gods. It would be rather like believing in...
the postman.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So like
That's great.
Somebody who comes around every day and does the things and it's, you don't have the question of, is this person real or not? Do I believe in this person or not? And so I often start thinking about belief from that perspective, but then living in the world of believing and not believing, it's so interesting that we proclaim and hold and live things in certain settings and then promptly forget about them in other settings. And so it's a good, when we see those magicians outside us doing that in the world, it's a good reminder to find all the places where we're acting as though what we know is true isn't true.
Say that more. Or again.
So So I know the world is alive and is full of vital intelligent forces who I'm dancing with. And if I'm sitting with a client and trying to find who are the plants who want to come and bring blessing to and with this person, I'm living that reality. And if I'm in ritual and I can feel the gods and the ancestors coming in as I call them in, I'm living in that reality. And other moments when I remember it, I'm living in that reality. And yet at the same time, when I'm sitting down looking at my checking account, trying to figure out if I can pay for my cell phone, I don't remember that reality.
Right. It's a sneaky trick of the reality police because, yeah, that's outsourced Saturn right away. Bills, money. Right. And then for all of us, wherever we cringe, let's all breathe into that tight spot where there's Saturn. May there be abundance from the exhaustless riches of the limitless substance. We draw all things needful, both spiritual and material. To Sean and to everybody. Right. No, it's all, we're all in this dream together. That's right. What, just, yeah, exactly. Well, it is conversation fest, right? I mean, it is conversing, you know, the sun and Gemini, you know, and Mercury and Gemini with its quintile to Mars and Leo. And I think we did so well, team, whether we knew it or not, or whether we did anything or not about the Trump thing, because Mars in Leo overhead at Mardi Gras pageantry fills the streets next to Venus, which is a community activist spreading ideals, you know, and training Chiron. So cool things to be brought alive. But we remember the tricky part of, if we don't animate what's given to us in a positive way, it can be animated demonically. And I remember the Sabian symbol for the Unabomber's sun, S-U-N, was Santa Claus furtively hiding gifts. Right? And it was like, oh, oof. Anyway, so, but it was, there was a breezy, positive glow around the thing that was just fine. So I just wanted to say, you know, thank you. Thank you, team, for that. Mm. The conversing, let me hand it back to you. But is, so conversing seems highly available. And we go calamus again, you know, conversing with the plants. The Mercury quintile Mars is the opening of portals between whatever might feed our celebratory Mardi Gras willingness to participate with our Mercury Gemini radical magazine. Thank you, Eamon Hennessy, circulating radical ideas. So what would be encouraging of our bright, creative, participatory Mardi Gras spirit that we could invite in, known or not?
Oh, well, I think first of the finding the vitality to experience and express and participate in liberation. And one of the medicines that has been most profound to me in calling that vitality back in is Eleuthero. And here's a funny place where the language police actually helping us, because in every country but the United States, it is called Siberian ginseng.
Hmm.
But it is illegal to label a product as ginseng in the US if it's not part of the Panax species, because of the lobbying of a particular aspect of the supplement industry. And so because of that, we had to go to its Latin name, which is actually a Greek name, which then refers us to a framework that is quite a bit more interesting and encouraging than, this is kind of like ginseng, but it's from Siberia. Because when we say the name Eleuthero, or Eleutherococcus is the full name, but when we say the name Eleuthero, those are the early syllables of the epithets of the name of Dionysus when he is called in as liberator, Eleutherios. And Dionysus as the wild redeemer dancing forth from the wilderness, who dances into Christianity as John the Baptist on the summer solstice, but who who carries that deep memory and that deep knowledge of being a child of earth and heaven, who will bloom back up, who will rise back up if cut down. And when all of the pressures and strictures and discouragements of the world bring us down, Eleuthero becomes a medicine that helps us rediscover that vitality to rise up again.
Great response. So, and how Eleuthero?
Yes.
Eleuthero and the calling of Dionysus. And do you like it as a tincture or a plant or the, just the word itself? Or
just the word itself will call so much into being, but I
okay,
do. But it is a medicine that I work primarily with as a tincture.
Tincture.
And primarily as a high-dose tincture.
Oh, okay.
So most of the time I'm giving a single drop of a medicine in order to call in its presence. But sometimes, especially when it's about rebuilding vitality, then I go very much in the opposite direction, which will be 3 to 5 droppers full at a time.
Wow. That's what you would do, 3 to 5 droppers full. And don't mix them like you've, or mistake one for the other as you did once, right? Okay.
Right, yes.
That's a serious dose of the wrong thing or the right thing. Okay, 3 to 5 droppers full. Okay, so, all right, well, let me just bring up the chart for fun for a moment to dance with that. All right, so here we are, everybody. Part of the great beauty of now, whoops, let me just move us over here. Here we go. Okay, there we go. You know, here's, oh, look, 29 Scorpio rising. We'll all feel jollier in about 2.5 minutes. Sag. but I just wanted to bring a beautiful thing, Ceres Demeter, dwarf planet, goddess of the earth, convener of the Eleusinian mysteries, which we want to get to because your reference to ergot root and LSD, because it's like we're all tripping anyway. I mean, in fact, I really do feel that way. It's like I have not taken anything, you know, today, even smoking or eating or anything, but I'm just like, ooh, but so, and she's at this beautiful, beautiful degree that is so wonderful for us. It's in a cave overhung with twisted roots. A seeker pours over the glowing pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript. And we go, ooh, ooh. You look very much the part, Sean, but so does, we can see everybody that way too. And look how beautiful. She's opposite Neptune. We're dreaming the earth and the earth is dreaming us. It's like, oh, that's really, really great. That's really wonderful. And she's part of a grand trine in earth. Pluto has just now dipped its plutonic self into zero Aquarius for, you know, 6 weeks or something, going, I'll be back into Capricorn for the indictment and everything. 29 Capricorn, but this is a particularly organized, competent degree, 29 plus Capricorn, and she is trining Ceres Demeter, who trines Vesta, where we are divested of orthodoxy and light the hearth flame dedicated to collective well-being, and Uranus is in that, a grand trine in earth, going, the dreams really want to incarnate, the atmospheric mist is like, oh, very good, the thing in it. So yeah, when you were mentioning, you know, Dionysus, and it caused me to cry out, because that's what I learned from friend Catherine Neville. Oh, Catherine Neville's somewhere here listening to the recording, that she found out why we call backstage the green room. It's from Greek drama. It's because it's sacred to Dionysus, the green man. Mm-hmm. And so every actor, regardless of their role, hero or villain, or all of us, before they, you know, went on stage, dedicated themselves to the flora and fauna of the earth before they went on. So everything sacred, backstage, green room, sacred, cool that way.
Can I add just a tiny bit?
Yes, recently, where are you?
I'm here. Recently reading about the trip from Athens walking to Eleusis. for the mysteries, that they would call out Dionysus's name along that path, which I thought was interesting. I haven't gotten, nobody's talking more about it, but that they would call out Dionysus's name on this walking journey, which is gotta play into something on the way to Eleusis. And I don't know if it's the herbal component or if it's something else. So I just wanted to, if that sparked either of you about what that might mean.
Well, and does anybody know, do you know, Sean, what Dionysus would sound like in Greek, in ancient Greek?
I do not.
Eleuthero. I'd have to look it up. I'd have to look it up again and find it. But,
yeah, okay. Eleuthero will do for now.
Yeah.
Eleuthero. Yeah. No, that's great. Well, so we're really framed, you know, Ceres Demeter, the part of us, you know, poring over the pages of an illuminated alchemical manuscript that has its voice, the two Mercuries, the Sun and Juno in Gemini, conversational Mercury, Mercury that sells the cow for three magic beans, Mercury, you know, square the Virgo, deep craft, magician, language crafting Mercury. So I would say, you know, that by our gathering, what's woofy and through our wizard guide and all, that the complexities are eager to find conversational, accessible, vernacular expression, right? And you're up for that, right, Sean?
Yes.
Yes, yes, he is, right? And we go, yes, you are. There, we do. We want to bless each other. So yeah, that's really super great. And then, you know, there's notes of this and that that I put into the quirky missives that you all have somewhere in your email, with many great recommendations of audible listening. The stories are finding us the medicine stories that we need. But yeah, and then so anybody have any wondering about the chart itself? Oh, I do have one more thing to say. We're pattern tracking beings, right? So I love this conversation. Saturn is stationing. It will retrograde in a couple of days. Just a stationing planet looks like it's standing still to us on Earth. It leaves an imprint. It really wants our attention. And, you know, as we began, and here we are, it goes, all right, what are you dedicated to? And what's the quality of a new tide of cultural energy being called in? Yeah, kazoos are good. So Saturn's at 7 Pisces, and look, Venus is at 7 degrees Leo. And this is an unusual conversation that we've referenced before, Pisces to Leo, going, it's not performance, it's deep, dedicated ritual magic. Now we're back to Eleusis, right? And you were musing somewhere, Sean, also about, you know, LSD and ergot, and wanted to give them expression here. Is that?
Or? Yes, very much so.
All right, I'll come back into human form here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, and spiraling back to where to the question arising a few minutes ago, why would you call out the name of Dionysus on the way to Eleusis? Which becomes especially interesting if we think about the fact that the mysteries at Eleusis are connected with the Demeter and Persephone story. And in many ways, there are deep connections between these, and the Claviceps fungus weaves its way into them. So why would you call out the name of Dionysus? Well, who is Dionysus? Dionysus is the one who is cut down and rises again. And the mysteries at Eleusis are mysteries in which you confront your own obliteration, your own death, and reemerge. Also, Dionysus is the wild redeemer, is that voice of the wild that echoes within the town and the city and stirs the wildness within all those who've been held within the walls of civilization. and calls them out to the dance. And this all becomes very interesting when we think about the claviceps fungus, the ergot fungus, Claviceps purpurea, a very, very old being, far, far older than humanity, whose alkaloids drifted out through mycorrhizal networks to inform the visions of all manner of beings long before the first hominins evolved. But then in response to the ways that humans did evolve, and in response to the ways in which humans were changing the land, this relationship developed between molds of the Claviceps genus and rye and wheat, the grains of civilization. And grains are very, very interesting when we look at the history of civilization, because when we look at grains, what are they? They're starches, and starches are long chains of sugar in repeating patterns that form a wall. And with the advent of grain agriculture, we have the rise of the walled community and the rise of the walled storehouse that holds on to the grain. And we have that rigidity and regulation of perception that begins to come in. So Dennis McKenna, I think, was joking when he said that corn and wheat are hallucinogenic drugs that encourage us to see one single permanent structure of reality, or something to the effect. But he was also in some ways correct, because those long chains of one-note sugars are white noise to our body, drowning out so many of the signals of the living world. But when those become overly cultivated and there's too much storage of excess, we end up having very often this fungus that will come and infect the grain. And in certain contexts, that just becomes a poison, and people experience bouts of madness, bouts of neurological neurological damage, and sometimes death. But and interestingly also, when this is not allowed any place for expression, it very often psychological symptoms will take on aspects of paranoia and mania, as they did, as it's theorized they may have during the Salem witch trials.
Right.
But twice in history, humans have found how to give this particular impulse expression. And so the first time that we know of was with the hereditary keepers of the shrines of Demeter, who learned from the ergot fungus and passed down from generation to generation the secret recipe for the initiatory brew that brought you into the ecstasy that opened you up to the mystery. And it's really interesting to me that this was associated with Athens and with the rise of democracy. And so if the people are going to play a role in the making decisions about the life and deaths of others, better that they understand their own death before making that choice on someone else's behalf. Initiation into the seriousness of that mystery becomes really, really important. And then that knowledge and that tradition gets lost. And with the exception of working with some of the other compounds in the context of midwifery, the art of working with that organism to bring invited vision disappears until in the 1940s, Albert Hofmann is experimenting with a fungus in his lab and takes the 25th extract of lysergic acid diethylamide that he drew from the fungus and has his very eventful bicycle ride home in which he watches the fabric of the world reveal itself. And then that pours forth again into the world at the very moment in history of the emergence of nuclear warfare and our potential to make that collective decision of death for the planet, which feels to me very much like a part of the working of the Gaian intelligence through both human and fungus in that particular moment. And what should arise from the introduction of this way of knowing into the culture but the Dionysian revelries of the music festival and of the communities that arise around music that comes from engaging deeply with the rhythms and flows and structure of reality. The Grateful Dead in many ways are a modern Dionysian ritual theater with no gifts and befoulements of the culture from which they arise, but much skill and beauty and creativity. And you know, I'm calling to mind now as well that this was an important theme for Barbara Ehrenreich when she set out to write her book about joy and liberation, Dancing in the Streets, where she begins by reflecting the psychology. Modern psychology has a great deal to say about anxiety and depression and grief, but very little to say about joy. And then opens into this Dionysian current of joy being a current of liberation throughout history that culture keeps trying to contain, but keeps pouring out and expressing itself again.
And just astro sportscasting here, I pulled up Albert Hofmann's chart, ally. So where Saturn is now is where it was when he was born, right? Mm. Saturn and Pisces. Saturn in Pisces, right, which is the dedication, you know, to pragmatic mysticism, really, and all the more important because he is a Capricorn, born at the full moon, you know, Capricorn incarnational agent of Saturn, where Saturn, there it is, and where it was now, and we go, oh, that's really great, yeah, and it was meant to be practical. His Uranus tricksters in Capricorn next to Vesta, community well-being next to Venus at 12 Capricorn, sitting in front of a blazing fire, the unconditional dedication of the self with all of its skills. And I think that is the sacramental moment, right?
Yes. One interesting concept that practicality is, because I noticed there's the part of me that sort of pulls back in response to it, because
to what?
To the idea of practicality, because all my life the things that actually have been most relevant have been called impractical. But what an opportunity,
yeah,
especially through engaging these kinds of medicines, to redefine it and say that actually there is nothing more practical than going and having the conversation with the old oak when you need to remember, and having the conversation with the young oak when you need to pass things down to another time.
Just
that
so.
That is eminently practical.
You are a practical, super responsible, Saturn disciplined guy. Those are freedom words, right?
Yes.
Right, because it is for all of us to encourage all of us to define things for ourselves, as you just did. You know, and it ties in with Meredith saying Dionysius's voice, you know, may well be sound like a big tree if big trees could talk. You know, it's like, well, remember Uranus trickster now is at the divinatory everything talking to us, right? You know, as a tree, as a thing, as a council, as a overheard conversation. So that's very wonderful. And Rebecca says, I believe they called out Yake or Iacchus, I-A-C-C-U-S, more like Bacchus, right? The Roman name Bacchus. And she says, I have no idea how to pronounce that. Well, we could just keep trying.
Right.
Iacchus. You know, until we hear you called. Okay, that's right. So just people can take out their favorite names for Dionysus into the woods, but call and response, right? It's seriously playful, right?
Yeah.
To call forth. But in the spirit of Granny Weatherwax, right, you know, the gods are conversationally available, and then just to toss in Eddie Izzard too, going, yes, and you know, Josh, the god of bad haircuts, and just, you know, everything, whatever we have a name for, there's a god. And I think that's jolly to have it so populated and everything alive, you know, and back to our dynamic. So, that's great. Well, because all that you said, and let's bring it in, you know, just remember what you said. You know, so there's Ceres Demeter, right? And the great pictures of her in profile holding wheat sheaves, right? For Robert Bly said disciplined arrows, but you're also, it's the ergot connection, right?
Well, and very often the ergot is actually shown on the sheaves.
Oh, cool. And because I have an Alex Gray ode to Albert Hoffman with the whole history of the thing. I must go spend time with it. As also, you know, the books we have on our shelf, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, because I have Walter Otto's book on Dionysus that I've probably been carrying around unread for decades, right? Do you know it?
I don't.
Okay,
so I shall have to find it too.
Well, I'll let you know. I'll let you know, but it's hopping up and down. See, whatever we're talking to, the plant that shows up, or the I ordered fun herbal tinctures, all run by Sean, but whatever shows up is in conversation.
Mm.
Not obligatory conversation, but just in conversation. So yeah. Right. So the ergot refinement, and then it comes to us as LSD, and then there's Albert Hoffman, a very kind person.
Mm.
Right. Super grounded. Right. There's hardly any air, not that lighthearted. He needed it for lightheartedness, but it's like earth, earth, earth. Chiron's in air at a performer in a ritual mystery play, Jupiter and Taurus. It's all, and his chart is humming now. I like that people who've died, their charts respond to transits. It's like, so he's happy that you called upon him and the history that he carries, and the gift that he felt it would be, and the neuroplasticity that it continues to bestow, and the microdosing phenomenon.
Yes, and may it continue to be liberated and liberatory, rather than, I don't think in the long run the attempts to harness things in particular directions will be especially successful with such a medicine. But I do worry in the shorter term about what happens when we enclose the commons of set and setting and hand them off to the private sphere. So may the Dionysian spirit always be with the medicine as it moves
forward. You would enjoy, or maybe you have enjoyed, or I hope you enjoyed the show I did with Rachel Harris.
Yes.
Yeah. Rachel Harris, I find a trustworthy narrator. I like her very much, writing on ayahuasca in America, and her latest book coming out now. I've forgotten the title, right? But she's talking to women entheo guides who've been doing this for like 20, 40 years, right? And we got to address that issue. Well, everything imprisoning or liberating, like everything, like Zoom, you know, I mean, everything. And so, you know, as somebody has said, you know, losing a lot of the history and the culture and the sacramental intent as sacraments are repackaged as therapy. Mm-hmm. And it's kin to my dance and periodic desire to throw the word archetype into the cauldron, because it's an old word, but Jung really used it it's a clunky word, to smuggle living ideas past the reality police into academia. It's nothing to worry about here. It's not like alive or anything. It's an archetype, right? And it's a word that's used too much, in my opinion, but I choose to not use it for that reason. But it was to smuggle it in. And the plants know what they're doing. Maybe they want to be in therapeutic thing, but complexity and nuance, right?
Ooh.
So that we know what we're doing.
Well, I'm thinking about all the beings who've been smuggled in and the importance of going and talking with them and saying, hey, you were smuggled in and you might have forgotten who you were on the outside.
Well, there's
this is still who you are. I keep what keeps coming back to me right today is a story Krishna Das tells of Hanuman, that Hanuman, the monkey god, was very strong and very playful. And he used to juggle monks for fun. And the monks got very angry at this. And so they cursed Hanuman to forget his strength. And so when you call out Jai Hanuman, when you are reminding Hanuman of his strength, because until he is reminded of who he is, he can't embody that and come forward to help you.
That's great. Reminded, right? And we might all say, you know, Jai Elizabeth, Jai Rita, Jai Rebecca, Jai Aaron, Jai Sean, Jai. Remember who we are. You know, and then the nafs, I like the Sufi term for the nafs, or the little demonic in self-disparaging parts of ourselves that we know full well, you know, they're humbling. You know, but Jai is it's very Jupiter, right? I mean, just to say it, you kind of have to do Jai. And even that can be imprisoning. That's right. If you have to do it in some cult, I speak from experience. Right? Yeah. Jeto, raisins are Bal Yashar Eotar. You must have to get up and march for the child guru at dawn. And anyway, never mind that. So yeah, everything, right? And so we're dedicated, right, to in ourselves and in others, you know, unlocking, liberating, and conversing, right? Like, what did you want to be before you got kerfuffled and grim, you know, or whatever this, and then how to, which is why I love you putting honey in the mist to cool out the conflagration. It's like Eddie Izzard's, you know, encouraging us to change phaser settings on Star Trek, right? He says Star Trek, very advanced civilization, but the phasers only had two settings, stun or kill. And he's like, we need many, many, many more settings, you know, left kettle on at home setting. But in keeping with your suggestion, Sean, you know, sudden interest in moss setting, like, oh, right. And so we're kind of filling that into the setting, like, you know, and the plants also can be willing to be part of a setting like chamomile mist or pine aerosol. Like, I'm smarter now. What have I been doing? So many, many settings, and the plants can chime in and help with that. Well, so I did my
master's degree paper on the therapeutic use of psychedelics at Atlantic University, which is affiliated with the ARE.
Oh,
Edgar
cool.
Bates in Virginia.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called Transpersonal Studies.
Mm-hmm.
And when I presented my paper, I was told that they didn't want me to talk about my own personal use of any entheogenics. And I just thought, why would I even do a paper if I hadn't experienced these things myself? So their whole emphasis, you know, was you can reach these states with meditation and prayer and so on. So I've kind of struggled with the kind of opposing views of, that different people have. And I've kind of reached the idea that we should be doing both. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're going to do these really, you know, pretty intense. I mean, doing ayahuasca was the most intense experience I ever had, going down to Peru, you know, when I was 55 years old. But we probably need to balance that with meditation and prayer. Ken Wilber talks about that, and he's probably one of the most intellectual spiritual authors that I know of. And I don't think he's actually experienced any psychedelics himself.
Excuse me, as I thought. Okay, I have a,
okay. I don't know.
Tim Wilbur's a little tripwire for me, but I have so many Virgo tripwires going.
Doesn't really matter, I guess. But he definitely thinks that, you know, if you're going to do these ayahuasca, even marijuana, that you should balance it with meditation, prayer, and like I know Stan Groff. October 6, 1966 is when LSD became illegal in the United States. So he and his wife branched off into doing holotropic breathing, which they felt could get you to similar states that the LSD or ayahuasca could get you to. So for me, it's always trying to balance these things out. And I certainly think that there's certain people that shouldn't do LSD. Like, I don't think schizophrenics should be doing LSD, or maybe bipolar people. It might just take them over the edge. But on the other hand, I think, like, I've looked into the study of iboga, which is mostly found in Africa. And
Orlando, Florida.
Is it?
I speak from experience.
Well, is it native to Orlando?
No, it's okay. African. It's African. Now we're in a Michael Gruber novel, right? Yeah.
Okay, but I know, from what I've read about iboga trips, I mean, they last really long and you almost have like a life review, but anybody that I've read that has done an iboga trip has cleared up their addictions. And certainly as a nurse, I see that whatever we do in the hospital for addiction is useless.
No, it's great that way. Let me chime in. because the iboga, which was given an interesting representation in the Wakanda Forever movie, but it is African. And see, with everything, you know, it's like before I was going to do this, I researched, you know, and the scale. And in keeping with our tying everything together, you know, in Africa, it was given to leaders, right, before they were inaugurated. And inaugurate means by the augur, because you see deeply Fujiba. And at a certain point, I stopped reading what it was supposed to be available. But yeah, it's a very serious endeavor. You must have a guide because you can't have any sound or motion at all, right? And people have found, and this seems true, that it cures addiction physically and the root cause, you know, and it was the most powerful, called the mother of all, you know, whatever we call them. What you didn't like the word entheogenic, Sean. You preferred the word entheo. What?
Entheodelic.
Entheodelic. Calling, oh, that's good.
Right. Yeah, potentiating the divinity within us instead of generating it.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Entheodelic. Right. So we wonder about all these things, like who's the first person who did this? Because if you didn't know, you were thinking you were going to die. Because it's like you get very cold and you can't move. If you move, it's like terrible. It's just, and you go, okay, go with this. And we're going to tease this into why this is kind of now. It's like, all right, go along with it. And then it was like going to the center of all storytelling, like four or five in more visually real than this table. Like, whoa, whoa. And some of them were true things that one saw with clarified dispassion, like, ah. People thinking of divorce in Africa also take it because it's an intelligence. And even speaking of it, I think we can invite it into our atmospheric mist. You look at things without reaction, right? Not the Parizada Mountain thing, with like, oh, that's how it is.
Well, everybody else that I've read about that's done a boga too also says the ancestors come to you and give you advice.
Right.
So I've never done a boga myself. I think it's probably more
for me. It was my mother's bridge party, which was kind of a letdown. Oh. Right. It's like, ah, oh, the ancestors. It's my mother's bridge party. Okay. But yeah, no, those are, you know, but then, you know, after, you know, it's a long, long time, right? It's a good 12, 14 hours. And as it slowly starts to calm down, then you feel like a dolphin, like a benign intelligence scanning your body. like, and then afterwards, slowly emerging, you know, it's like I had wolf hearing. It's like I could hear, you know, the crinkle of a leaf, you know, 50 feet away. It's like, whoa. And the person who was the guide said, some people who come like soldiers wearing uniforms couldn't put them back on. Like, you can't not be yourself. So I, being a rascal, going, I wonder if it will let me keep tobacco. Mm-hmm. Oh, it did. Oh, that's so great. Anyway, so yeah, but those are good points, Autumn. Now we're in cahoots, you know, because it's the essence in that Sean's bringing alive, and that's alive in our chart and kind of humming too, which is the sacramental. It's a remedial help to the humans to bring them back into sane, reverent, common sense, collaborative humility. Like, so yeah, good impulse. And how's your mother?
Oh, she had like 4 huge poops the day after we sent her energy.
We are a great laxative. What? That's why we really gathered.
Next day, so she's in rehab now, and she's like a beast on her walker. Like, she's determined to get back on the pickleball court.
We see that dancing the jig. Well done.
Yeah,
Elizabeth, did you want to say something? Oh no, I'm. Oh, I say no. Actually, my charts were covering up your microphone. Sorry.
The other thing I wanted to say is, I think I emailed you that I was waking up when you were emailing at like 3 a.m. And it just seemed like everything I was reading this morning fit in with this class. And one of the things I was reading was an astrologer named Rob Brenzi. Do you know him?
Another tripwire. That's great.
He kind of reminds me of you.
I know. There's a reason for that.
He wrote a book called Pronoia instead of Paranoia. And
he got that from me and Andy Weil too. All right. But fair enough. Anyway, what did he have to say that was useful for yourself? I will.
He was talking about, we've been talking a lot about alive things and honoring the alive things. Well, he was talking about how we need to have rituals to honor are the things that are going extinct. Like, even all the insects. I mean, I keep hearing about all the insects that are, you know, and then people will say, so what if the, you know, the bugs are dying?
We know that. Let me hand it back to Sean about the insects and the humming, because it's the voice of everything. And this wonderful book, The voice of the infinite and the small, healing the human insect relationship. But no, you're right. It's the insect apocalypse is crucial, and to the plants and the everything and life and the birds and the, all of that.
Right.
And to have our kinship. Do you want to chime in, Sean?
Yeah, insect. And I think bridging back through that as well. That you know, yes, the voices of the insects are part of the voice of everything. And I think about, you know, Yeats' wonderful invocation of the bee loud glen. And then I think about when the blackthorn on this land is in blossom, and I go out and I can hear the bees and the hummingbirds before I see them. And their sound is the sound of the life of the tree come into flight. And all of these medicines, all of these voices of the earth elders that come to us through many, many traditions, right, are part of amplifying our capacity to listen. But then the question becomes, what are we listening to? And what we listen to is shaped so much by the prayer of our hearts. And if we listen deeply enough, then we begin to participate in everything else that is dreaming us into being, and being in a cooperative weaving of that calling us into being. But if we have summoned untrustworthy voices, we may reshape our being accordingly. And these are medicines that, when we talk about things like the end of an addiction or the relief of depression or the clearing of trauma, in some ways we can almost say these are side effects of allowing ourselves to be redreamed by trustworthy voices. And so that calls, that calling in of those deeply trustworthy voices to be part of what is dreaming us is.
You'd said Lobelia allows us to hear our hearts.
Yes. Well, it's so often our tension that our tension gets in the way of our attention. we in the electronic noise of the modern world, and also in a culture that teaches us that consciousness is located solely in particular regions of our brain, we become very dissociated from the heart, which is the organ that is feeling all of the world as it interacts with us and we interact with it and that flow. You know, our heart is the largest electromagnetic field in our bodies, and every electromagnetic field in the world pulls on every other electromagnetic field and is pulled on by it. So it is our direct conversation with the structure of matter and energy, which we interpret as our feeling sense and the feeling of the interiority of things. And so several years ago, I was working with the practice that I work with so often of asking people to bring their attention to their heartbeats and bring gratitude to the heartbeat, which then begins to re-engage that awareness. And for the first time ever, I was an entire room full of people who could not feel their own heartbeat, even when they put their hands on their chests. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for a moment, I was just flabbergasted. And then I thought, aha, I shall go get Lobelia from its secret hidden cabinet, because in the place where I was, people didn't trust Lobelia, the great opener of the way. And I will give every person a single drop of Lobelia. Lobelia stimulates the deepening of our breath, the opening of our chest, the relaxation of tension, and the function that corresponds with the pericardium in Chinese medicine of allowing the feeling self to be rightly engaged with the world, not flooded, but not closed. That returns to harmony, the yin and the yang of the heart, the expansion and the contraction of the heart. And so giving a single drop of Lobelia, I found that everyone in the room was then able to feel their hearts.
So I feel it might be a fun time. We have a rousing, fun, short thing that is available to us all to think of in a good way, what do we no longer have time for, right? This is an ancient video short thing, so wonderful. First the news story and then what happened to it. You'll hear, it's just a wonderful woman whose narration of her news story, Living Through the Fire, was so melodic. You know, and then it's just quirky, 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 liberating. I think for all of us, you know, like when you were saying, you know, Sean, like, you know, what do we not have time for anymore? You know, external constraints that make us cringe about, you know, when we go and magic is sensible. Anyway, so here we have Backstage Badger has it lined up, and here we go. I love this thing from Bob Goff originally. Okay, here we go.
One resident describes her horrifying experience when she first realized the complex was on fire.
Well, I woke up to go give me a cold pop. Then I thought somebody was barbecuing. I said, oh Lord Jesus, it's a fire. Then I ran out. I didn't grab no shoes or nothing, Jesus. I ran for my life. And then the smoke got her. I got bronchitis. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Jesus, Jesus, Jesus,
in so far, Lord Jesus, in so far.
Said, oh Lord Jesus, in so far.
Said, oh Lord Jesus, in so far.
Jesus, 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 Jesus,
Jesus. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Charming, n'est-ce pas? Right, just,
yeah.
Just so quirky and wonderful, and the metaphysics of the mundane. It was just somebody narrating their thing. So poetry everywhere. There's Dionysus, right? There, yeah. It's everywhere, right? And that's, you know, what Autumn was referring to also too. Just because it's everywhere. The magic is everywhere, and we just get guided back to that. Anyway, I love that thing. It's ancient. I'm delighted if some of you haven't seen it before, but even if you have, it just seemed right. And a great time for, like, what are we done with? You know, we can send that to the trial too. You know, ain't nobody got time for that. We got stuff to do. We have to redesign the entire human cultural interface with nature. You know, we can't have corruption, treason, and we don't, ain't nobody got time for that. Anyway, so it's something to put in our boat, you know, to go, ain't nobody got time for that, with just the right attitude, right? She's singing, she's poetic about her fear of death. Right? That is really great. Anyway, yeah. So may it be true for all of us, poetic about turning our fear. And it's cute. I've watched different versions of the video for a long time, but that's her son pacing back and forth going, oh man, my mom's getting all this attention. I can't stand it. But all the little details are just darling.
Including the question of time itself and the way we measure it.
Yes.
I woke up this morning and I realized today is the day I changed my clocks from Chronos to Kairos. Kairos being the time when there is great potential for transformation in everything, the time in which all other times turn.
Yes. I didn't get that. Is that like Eastern Daylight Time? Today was the day we were supposed to adjust that?
Well, today wasn't the day for that adjustment, but we have this other frame where, regardless of our time zones, we're operating in Chronos, in chronological, counted, measured time, and the other form of time is Kairos, which is the time when history opens and everything can change.
The Kairos fulcrum moment, where everything that everyone does matters, yeah, and just, I guess. We may want to begin to deconvene, to set sail slowly, because time, right? But anybody who wants to say, or I actually haven't checked the chat lately too. Oh, that's right. Oh, Richard Badger posted, ain't nobody got time for that. It's so rousing, right? It's like, you know, in the morning, like poetry, you know, put it on, dance around. Yes, link for the video, absolutely. Oh, and then Faye is asking, you know, what's the name of the woman Sean mentioned who queried about why no one had studied joy? Barbara Ehrenreich, a gloomy person who became joyful. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, she wrote many very serious and worthy nickel and dimed, right? She lived on minimum wage as a waitress for a year and wrote about it. And it goes like, she was, you know, outraged for a reason. And then
just died recently.
Yeah. Well, medium. Yeah.
Last year.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We waved to everybody.
Well, I was going to say the thing I don't have time for right now is fear of COVID. I'm so over it. I mean, I never even got into that fear, even as a nurse, but my mom's at the rehab now and they're already starting with, oh, the person in room 152 tested positive for COVID. And now we have to all, you know, and it's like, when did we ever do that with any other disease? And I'm probably on the opposite viewpoint of many listening to this or whatever, but
I love masks. It's kind of a Saturn Uranus thing.
Do?
I think, yes, let me, because my mask.
They're bondage. They're bondage.
No, not if you get my mask. Yeah. bought from Etsy, right? It's like, make it fun, make it a sacrament. These are breathable, they're fun. Even when I run into like anti-vax people, they're like, oh, we love that, right? It's fierce but jolly. Right. And it's like, I think it's a Saturn Uranus thing. It's a small, maybe symbolic, maybe real, take your pick, dedication to community well-being. I know people who are deaf, right, and who read lips. That was very difficult for them.
I know speech therapists, and they said the kids are so far behind because they couldn't see people's lips. I mean,
All right, Autumn, but we're not going to whaley-whaley. We're going to invite you to create a liberating blessing around this.
I'm liberating blessing for RFK Jr. for president. That's what I'm...
Oh, what a tripwire. You're so full of tripwires. Excellent. You are a real goat-getter. That's great. Yes, unfortunately, I know all those people, but we'll get back to that. But
another interesting
more entheogens.
Yeah, what? Another interesting piece with the masks is that as an autistic person, I found them incredibly liberating.
Yeah, right.
Because my facial expressions are biologically different than other people's facial expressions. And so most of the time, other people are expected to know what the position of my mouth means, and I'm expected to know what the position of their mouth means. And so much is given to whether we're interpreting those movements of the face in the same way. And when suddenly we weren't, I felt a lot freer to be in engagement with people.
Right. And it really is about, you know, Uranus Trickster says, we are big gods dancing with you. We don't care what you do. We care the manner in which you do it, from freedom and choice rather than fear. So when I was lucky enough to be in Egypt, in the Sinai Desert with the Bedouins, right, and you wear head wraps and you wear a cloth right here and you go, it's a burqa and it's a sensible, liberating thing to wear in the desert. What a good idea, right? And layers of cloth keep you cool and keep you warm. To have somebody tell you had to, right? There's a burqa thing, you know. So about everything, how does this want to be liberating in some way? Yeah. So yes, no, there's all those things, but we do know, I think we might even find a point of agreement here, that there will continue to be viral storms as long as humans quit despoiling the earth, that the disruption of natural environment unleashes viral storms. And that's just, the virology is a fascinating and great, you know, on a really great book, Spillover, that Aaron loaned me a long time ago, and I'm still on the first 100 pages, but it's a great 100 pages, right? And it is detective work. But we'll tiptoe away from that at the moment. There we go. Easy, easy, everybody, everybody's horses. That's good. More entheogens. But the entheogens we invoke, you know, they are the capacity with calm clarity, not reacting, right? Parizanda does not react, and that's how she ascends the thing. If we love freedom to react to anything, and we all speak to ourselves, I go, oh, it's a tripwire. To react to anything is not free. To cultivate an expanding repertoire of responses, you know, is to be aligned with nature's liberating metaphoric ingenuity. There we go. So it's a choice. Like, I could do that. And also, we have a repertoire of like the plant itself, like Iboga, to be able to look at things and go, ah, without having to have a reactive opinion about it, just, ah, information coming in, you know, and then the broad distilling of the blessings, you know. The moon moved into Taurus, exalted. We're in the dark of the moon. There's a new moon on Saturday, Sunday. Oh, it's interesting. Saturn is stationing on Father's Day, right? So it's like, oh, there you go. So everything could be sacred going, right, Saturn, authority, Father, bless our fathers. And it will be a new moon at 26 plus Gemini. Right. Late Saturday night, West Coast, early Sunday morning, East Coast, new moon, Saturn stationing Father's Day. That's fun. You know, everybody gets to bless their father no matter what. And then just to aspiring to deconvene, because I like the short time and your generator and the sun and everything, Sean. But I do like keeping our vessel metaphor going with all of our, you know, quirkiness. And what shall we pack? We have ain't nobody got time. Whatever it is, ain't nobody got time for that. And what shall we pack in our boats? And that's why in the missive we go, hop in, freedom. The Statue of Freedom is really great. She's wearing feathers and plants on her head. And our affinity plants, you know, whatever you might suggest, you know, like when we were starting off about the atmospheric mist. And see, these are, regardless of our diverging opinions about anything, you know, the atmospheric mist is always blessing. May anything up to no good, you know, fizzle like a wet firecracker fart, you know, just like that works for everybody. Anything up to no good, right? May we all awaken tomorrow self-possessed rather than merely possessed. That works great, right? So these magic things that work across any illusory, whatever it is, you know, boundary. We were thinking Devil's Club in the mist. Is that good for just our?
Absolutely. Well, and also at the heart of that spiky plant is a very soft heartwood that's deeply nourishing to the heart spirit. And so most of the time when people work with Devil's Club, they work only with the root bark. But the plant always told me to work with the whole stalk. So I had the spines and the heartwood at the same time. And then all of our speaking of vessels also makes me think about yarrow.
Somebody pointed
it out. Matthew Wood speaks about yarrow as being the plant that helps the blood flow in the vessels in the proper way. Which is the only way that I've ever heard the explanation of why it can stop hemorrhaging and also break up blood clots, come forward in an intelligible way.
What's the I Ching divination tool too, right? Yeah.
Yes. As the I Ching divination tool, that's the Fujon passing in. We find with mugwort and wormwood as well. But a different, cooler isomer of it. And then in Irish, yarrow is a perfect Father's Day plant because the name is Athair Talún, father of the land, which then raises all kinds of interesting questions. It also calls in our other ally, the wolf, who is Máchtir, son of the land.
The wolf is son of the land?
Yes. And the yarrow is father of the land.
That's so great. I still have my yarrow stalks I picked at Fintorn the summer that Nixon was impeached to use as a divination. But being an American, I don't do it very often because we're such a fast food divining thing. Just throw the coins, right? But I do have them. I can hear them rustling now, right? Going, hello, remember us, right? So they're there. And I do remember picking them. So yeah, and what do you make of it? Hadn't occurred to me until recently. We have our alchemical vessel, our vessel in which we set sail, and then somebody said blood vessels. I'm like, right. How can we tie that together? Are we setting sail in our blood vessels? What do you want to do with it, anybody, or Sean?
Well, where our blood flows, our awareness goes.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Say more. Like what?
And so we are allowing our awareness to be carried by the flows through the right channels to the right places, to the parts of us that need to be remembered, integrated, and awakened.
Yeah.
And when the vessel, you know, when the blood vessels get rigid, and that's when the pressure goes up, or even like the fever, that girl, that little girl in the movie, like with her fever, the pressure goes up. And so when we let the rigidity go in our vessels and our blood vessels, that's when it flows smoothly. And also like the rigidity in a boat too, you want it to be flexible so it doesn't break up in a storm too. So just inviting in the flexibility in the blood vessels is, I just add that in too.
No, that's great. And that brings me back just to something I wanted to add to Sean's commentary about the people being turned into stone and that maybe that's a good thing. And I go, yes, that is an excellent point of view. One of many Gemini stories. That's wonderful. And then also remember when Merlin is teaching Arthur, he says, listen to the stones, right? And what do the stones say? And the stones say, cohere. It's like, oh, that's great. But then the other way I wanted to go with the stone, of course, as metaphor, is the portable prisons we carry around for ourselves, of which rheumatism really is an interesting one, where very often what I've found is the person who has rheumatism in the family is carrying, embodying the family's constraints in a physical form, right? And to be able to understand things on that metaphoric level. And it's like, oh, the person often who's ill is carrying a lot, right? It's like we're all in this dream together. So the idea of the portable prison, or where our hearts turn to stone because we could not resist reacting, like, mm-hmm. So adding to that, and then also being a stone, cohere, also very wonderful. I love forehead to stone, right? Our little foreheads love to be pressed against stone.
And if we remember that stones are alive and remember, so much else enters possibility. Robin Artisan wrote a wonderful book about Stonehenge called House of the Giantess. And in the opening essay, he speaks about, we ask how did people haul these stones and how did people learn to use these stones to make these things? And we're asking the wrong question, because we are assuming that stones were something that people used. But from the standpoint of any ancient person, it was the conversation with the stone and the people and the stars creating that alignment together.
Right. And I'm just, you're just, you know, may everything resonate with everything in everyone that they need right now. And I'm just thinking of the Japanese, so trippy. And they have this New Year's Eve ceremony where you listen to the incense. And the incense is in a stone brazier, and you hold it up and you listen to the incense. And it's like, oh, those Japanese are so encouraging. I mean, so right under that island constraint, like Japan and England, like comes just incredible, exquisite, like freedom under constraint, right? There, that's an interesting cultural thing. So the exquisiteness of, yeah, you know, you're listening to smoke, you're listening to the, anyway, it was very trippy, because whatever we are available to, it's like, oh, that's a real thing, mm-hmm. right? Just again, and that's what the entheogens go, like, oh, that's real. That was how I felt as a child, right? All that. So
I think about Dogen and his beautiful Mountains and Rivers Sutra, where he speaks of how a mountain is a slow moving river of stone, and a river is a swiftly moving mountain of water. And he says, if you doubt the blue mountains constantly walking, you doubt your own walking.
Yes. And stained glass is always moving.
Yes.
That's why it's thicker at the bottom. And that's why when I did take a stained glass class, and it's very interesting, it's moving so much that you strike it and then you must break it immediately or it'll flow back together.
Wow.
Right. And the stone stained glass people were always given the first seat at the bar, because people knew they wouldn't live very long because of the lead, right? But anyway, but so yes, everything's moving, everything's speaking. So in our Noah's Ark, in which we're about to, our vessel, our Noah's vessel, each person customized, but we're on a similar wave, right? Yeah, we're just, what shall we pack very briefly, you know, and what plants are suggested. We had some, and then I hijacked somebody's, somebody's Herbs for Higher Consciousness chart that I don't know if you got a chance to look at, but it's got wonderful things. Skullcap, for instance, to ease worry, right?
Yes.
So these are good memories, right? Skullcap, what a good idea, right? Because it eases worry and anxiety, right?
Well, it brings the consciousness that's too active up in the front of the head back down into the gut.
Right. And then Blue Lotus that we spoke about last week, and we're putting some of that in. Nutmeg is very trippy and adorable. Shizandra, you've spoken of that before as something that gathers our wits.
It is an astringent of consciousness, but it astringes consciousness to the heart. Ooh. So when our watery Shen gets scattered out, the Shizandra astringes it back to the heart. There are two plants I think of as astringents of consciousness, and they're so very different in their feeling. And one of them is rhodiola, which I know has worked wonderfully with many people, but my own body cannot abide without feeling like there's a hatchet in the middle of my forehead. Because what rhodiola does is it gathers all of your awareness into a single point in the front of your forehead. So it makes it very easy to focus on structures of things, whereas Shizandra gathers your consciousness, astringes your consciousness to your heart. So it's much easier to feel yourself held within yourself.
Excellent. So we're packing that, right?
Yes.
All right. I think we're done for packing for the week, just for fun, unless anybody wants to put something else in their boat. And I think, you know, just it's such a quirky time that rousing is a good way to go, right? Are we up for rousing? Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Yes. All right. We're up for rousing. It's our house band. I'm going to tell them someday, the Bengtsons. Yes. It's another thing. It's yeah. And Richard found this too. It's called 100 Days. And as Richard remarked, you know, her unbridled joy, and just feel how cathartic she. I just love this person. We'll ride out on this song. And encourage everybody to not be self-conscious and just to undulate, move around or not, you know, nobody, as though nobody's looking, but it's pretty participatory. And it's a prayer. It's a prayer. It's a prayer for our next 100 days. Right. And I think that's a good prayer. So here we go. Thank you always, Sean. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody. Here we go. 100 days. Yay.
Of bright light, 100 days, you're my man, a bright light away, away. Hey!
For the first time
we look up
and find we've never had it any better.
And when we find he'll never get better, we build the world and fight the time.
I will never die. I make America I am a universe. I'll never go away. I'm your man, I'll never go away.
Away, away, away. Hey.
all of the shots and make her whole.
Thank you.